For God's sake, let us sit upon the ground and tell sad stories of the deaths of kings, how some have been deposed, some slain in war.
Ay me, I see the ruin of my house. The tiger now hath seized the gentle hind. Insulting tyranny begins to jut upon the innocent and aweless throne.
What is a man? Sure he made us with such large discourse, looking before and after, gave us not that capability and godlike reason to fust in us unused.
O my dear father, restoration hang thy medicine on my lips, and let this kiss repair those violent harms that my two sisters have in thy reverence made.
I am a king that find thee, and I know 'tis not the balm, the sceptre and the ball, the sword, the mace, the crown imperial, the throne he sits on, nor the pomp that beats on the high shore of the world.
This is the mighty history of the British Empire, a people living on a tiny island in the North Atlantic Ocean. Built an empire that circled the earth and brought freedom and education to languishing millions. This empire was blessed by Almighty God and one of his best educated teachers, William Shakespeare. Shakespeare has educated some of the greatest leaders of all time, such as Abraham Lincoln and Winston Churchill.
We shall never surrender.
Our troubled world needs a fresh crew of nation-building leaders. Are you ready to step up to the challenge? Welcome to the exciting classroom of Shakespeare's Royal Education with host Dennis Leap.
Well, greetings, everyone. Welcome back to Shakespeare's Royal Education. And I don't have any written comments today, but I just happened to actually run into a person who actually listens to Shakespeare's Royal Education. And they just mentioned to me that they said, hey, we're waiting for a new Royal Education. What's wrong with you? And I said, well, let me tell you. I teach two other classes. It's midterms. I have all these tests to correct. I just can't do Shakespeare all the time. And they said, oh, well, by the way, we like hearing about Churchill as well. And I said, yeah, well, we just got a new one of those done. So just be patient. It's all going to come. So if you're out there listening, I still like you. And don't worry about it. We're going to get more and more comments as time goes on. Now, by way of reminder, on our last program, I moved our discussion to Act 3, Scene 1. And I'm not going to read all that to you. I want you to remember this. Bolingbroke had returned to England with a large army to support his plan to take back his estate and wealth stolen by King Richard after the death of his father, John of Gaunt. Now, when he first comes back, that's what he says. I'm just back to get what is mine. And he keeps telling people that. Now, in the play, it is assumed that King Richard is still at war with the Irish at the same time. He's not even showing up in the play at this point. And so there's a reason for all of this, for all of you out there listening. And I want to break this down a little bit better for you today. Now, remember also, I discussed that the famous Northerner Lord Northumberland had joined forces with Bolingbroke. And so I want you to keep that in your mind as well. And we're going to go back through some of this in a limited way. But, it's just really important. This is a challenging play. I know we just had the midterm for the students in it that are taking the Shakespeare's English Kings class. They're junior, senior students. And so I just made them do a lot of writing and, but then also we talk about the play and then we also show the films of the plays as well. Now today, what I want to do is I want to begin at Act 2, Scene 4, Line 1 at the top of the page 54. Now, in some ways, I'm going back a little bit, but this is something we haven't covered. And essentially, once you see this, you're going to realize that this scene shows us that Richard is losing the war with the Irish. And the Welsh army supporting Richard believe he is dead because he has not returned to meet them. And so I'm going to go ahead and start reading. This is page 54, and it's we're going to start at line 1 under Act 2, Scene 4. So this is the Welsh captain. And essentially, this Welsh captain he's talking to the Earl of Salisbury. And remember, the Earl of Salisbury is there in the war with Richard to help protect Richard and things like that. So the Welsh captain says, "My Lord of Salisbury, we have stayed 10 days and hardly kept our countrymen together, and yet we hear no tidings from the king. Therefore, we will disperse ourselves. Farewell." And remember now, the king, when he was in Ireland, also needed other support from the Welsh as well. And then Salisbury says, "Hey, stay yet another day, you trusty Welshman. The king reposes all his confidence in thee." And so the king was really relying upon the Welsh captain, but the Welsh captain could care less. And so he goes on to say, "'Tis thought the king is dead. We will not stay. The bay trees in our country are all withered, and meteors fright the fixed stars of heaven. The pale-faced moon looks bloody on the earth, and lean-looked prophets whisper fearful change." So the Welsh are really into paganism. They're really into false prophecy. And they're listening to all their prophets, and everything says, look, everything is really crazy right now around the earth, and we're not hanging around. There's something up. And he goes on to say, "Rich men look sad, and the ruffians dance and leap. There is one in fear to lose what they enjoy, the other to enjoy by rage and war. These signs forerun the death or fall of kings." And so hopefully out there when you're listening, this is a Shakespeare thing. Shakespeare has this all together because he's foreshadowing us to things are not going to go well for King Richard. So this is all what it's all about. And let me repeat that one line. It's line 15. "These signs forerun the death or fall of kings. Farewell. Our countrymen are gone and fled. As well assured, Richard, their king, is dead." And so that's Shakespeare's famous rhyming couplets. he's giving us some information, but he's also has to have it in poetic form. And again, it's really great. "Our countrymen are gone and fled, as well assured Richard their king is dead." And so Salisbury then goes, "Oh, Richard, with the eyes of heavy mind, I see your glory like a shooting star fall to the base earth from a firmament. The sun sets weeping in the lowly west, witnessing storms to come, woe and unrest. Thy friends are led to wait upon thy foes, and cross thee to all thy good, all fortune goes." So there's a bunch of couplets again from Shakespeare. So you can see that things are beginning to turn against him. And now let's go to page 55. And what Shakespeare has really planned out for all of us that are reading this play is that he's showing, okay, there's a problem now with the Welsh. They're leaving him. But now, essentially, what we see is Bolingbroke now come on the scene. And so it's really like step one, step two, showing us what Bolingbroke is going to be doing and what he's on the scene. Now, so Bolingbroke is there, the Duke of Hereford, York, Northumberland, then Ross, Percy, Willoughby, Bushy, and Green. They're all together. And so these are what Richard would call the traitors. So Bolingbroke, and remember now, he's been fighting his way back, but now Shakespeare's really helping us to see that Bolingbroke really didn't come back just for what his lands were, or his lands, or his money. He really does want to be king. That's the point. And remember now, they're cousins. Bolingbroke is a little bit older than Richard, probably had a little bit more education on how to rule. But Bolingbroke says, bring forth these men. And he says, Bushy and Green, I will not vex your souls, since presently your souls must part your bodies. So the reason why I say that Bolingbroke is really kind of proving that he's not just there to get his land and his money, but he wants to be king, and he's really in judgment of these men, and he's going to execute them. That's something a king would do, not someone that's just coming back to take their land and their money. And remember now, Bushy and Green were best friends of the king. And if you remember back to the last couple of programs, Bushy and Green, they were very supportive of what Richard was doing. And he said, with too much urging your pernicious lives, for 'twere no charity yet to wash your blood from off my hands, here in the view of men, I will unfold some causes of your deaths. So here he goes into this legal issue, and this is something that's very king-like. He says, you have misled a prince, a royal king, a happy gentleman in blood and lineaments. You, by you, unhappy and disfigured clean, you have in a manner with your sinful hours made a divorce betwixt his queen and him, broke the possession of the loyal bed, and stained the beauty of a fair queen's cheeks. Now, this is where the question comes up, and this is a question in Shakespeare's mind, and he puts it in there, is, was King Richard a homosexual? Now, this is something, I did do some research on it before today, and the thing is, this is conjecture by Shakespeare. This isn't proven by history. But there's still a lot of other people that think that he was a homosexual. And so there's no doubt that King Richard had some weird ways about him. He said, with tears drawn from her eyes by your foul wrong. So he's talking about the queen. And then he says, myself. And notice what he says about himself. A prince by fortune of my birth, near to the king in blood, near in love, till you did make him misinterpret me, have stooped my neck under your injuries, and sighed my English breath in foreign clouds. So what he's saying to Bushy and Green, hey, you helped get me banished. You're part of the problem. And he says, I am a prince. I'm near to the king than you are. And so in other words, he's getting his comeuppance, and so essentially what he does is, we'll keep reading here just a little bit, but essentially what he does is he executes them. He goes on to say, this is page 56, at the top of the page, it's line 21. It says, eating the bitter bread of banishment, while you have fed upon my signories, disparked my parks, felled my forest woods, from my own window tore my household coat, raised out my impress, leaving me no sign, saving men's opinions and my living blood to show the world I'm a gentleman. So they ransacked his house. They were all together with it. They all worked together. And he said, you've ruined everything that would show me as a gentleman. He said, to show the world I'm a gentleman, this and much more than twice all this, condemns you to the death, see them delivered over to execution and the hand of death. Now, essentially what he's relying on is Northumberland, and he's relying on help from his uncle York. They're all there. York has finally agreed to be with him, with his nephew. So Bushy comes up and he says, well, more welcome is the stroke of death to me than Bolingbroke to England. Lords, farewell. So Bushy says, well, if he's going to be king, I'd rather be dead anyway. And so, guess what? They help him through his death. Then Green says, my comfort is that heaven will take our souls and plague injustice with the pains of hell. And so in other words, Green is saying, you know what? maybe the plague is going to fall on Bolingbroke. And then Bolingbroke says, "My lord Northumberland, see them dispatched." And so then Northumberland and all the others with the prisoners. And he goes on then to say, Bolingbroke says, "Uncle, you say the queen is at your house. For God's sake, fairly let her be entreated. Tell her I send to her my kind commends. Take special care my greetings be delivered." And then York says, "A gentleman of mine I have dispatched with letters of your love to her at large." Then Bolingbroke says, "Thanks, gentle uncle. Come, lords, away to fight with Glendower and his accomplices a while to work and after holiday." And so essentially the Glendower is going to come up. He's Welsh. He is I guess you'd call him a lord. He's got some unusual qualities that we're going to read about as we go through the play. I don't want to give everything away, but Glendower is definitely Welsh, and he is, or maybe I should say, maybe he's more Scottish. We'll figure that out. I didn't plan to talk about him too much today, and I can see why. But Bolingbroke is really using this man to help him take over for Richard. So let's go now to Act 3, Scene 2. Now, essentially, they're at Berkeley Castle, Barkloly Castle, and this is on the coast of Wales. And so essentially what's happened, to really understand the history of it, is the king has actually left Ireland, and now he's come to Wales. He's landing back, let's say, in England, but he's on the coast of Wales. And the king says, Barkloly Castle, call this at hand. And so he's on the coast of Wales. He's back. Then Armoral, remember now, his cousin is Armoral. He's the son of York. He says, "Yea, my lord, how brooks your grace the air after your late tossing on the breaking seas?" And so Armoral, again, is a very close cousin to the king. And the king says, "Needs must I like it well. I weep for joy to stand upon my kingdom once again. Dear earth, I do salute thee with my hand. The rebels wound thee with their horses' hoofs." And he's talking about the beach. You know, he's talking about, he reaches down, he grabs up some sand, and he wants to kiss it. He wants to be so glad he's back on his own land. And he says, "However, these rebels that wound thee with their horses' hoofs, as a long-parted mother with her child plays fondly with her tears and smiles in meeting, so weeping, smiling, greet I thee, my earth, and do thee favors with my royal hands. Feed not thy sovereign's foe, my gentle earth, nor with thy sweet comforts his ravenous sense, but let thy spiders and that suck up thy venom and heavy-gated toads lie in their way." So essentially what the king is doing, he's giving us a view of the common, the way the coast looks, what's going on out there. And he's talking about the toads, he's talking about spiders and venom. And, in other words, he's saying, well, don't come after me. If you're a snake, please don't come after me. You know, if you've got a spider, I don't want to suck up their venom. And he says, "And heavy gated toads lie in their way, doing annoyance to the treacherous feet, which with usurping steps do trample thee." And so he's saying, sorry, I'm tramping on you too. And but what he's going to say, "Yield stinging nettles to mine enemies." And so if you've ever been to England, I've been to England, there is a plant there that is called stinging nettles. And it looks it doesn't look like it's going to grab you or sting you. But I walked into a whole group of it, and it's painful. So I've been there. Said, "Yield stinging nettles to my enemies. And when they from thy bosom pluck a flower, guard it, I pray thee, with a lurking adder." So he's saying, look, if they're going to take some of your flowers from the stinging nettles, hopefully there's an adder there to bite them. He says, "Those double-tongued may with a mortal touch throw death upon thy sovereign's enemies. Mock not my senseless conjuration, lords. This earth shall have a feeling, and these stones, proved armed soldiers, ere her native king shall falter under foul rebellion's arms. So here again, Shakespeare's setting us up. The king thinks he's going to really shut this rebellion down. He's going to get Bolingbroke out of the way, and in some ways, he's kind of stirred up with what's going on. Then Carlyle is the priest. He says, "Fear not, my lord, that power that made you king hath power to keep you king in spite of all." He said, "Don't worry about the nettles and the snakes and the toads and all that." He said, "The means that heavens yield must be embraced and not neglected, unless heaven would, and we will not. Heaven's offer, we refuse the proffered means of succor and redress." So Armrell then pipes up and he says, "He means, my lord, that we are too remiss. While Bolingbroke, through our security, grows strong and great in substance and in power." And so Armrell really is kind of stupid by what he said. He said, Armrell is telling his cousin, "Don't worry about Bolingbroke." And the king says, "'Tis comfortable cousin, knowest thou not that when the searching eye of heaven is hid behind the globe that lights the lower world, then thieves and robbers range abroad unseen, in murders and in outrage boldly here. But when from under this terrestrial ball he fires the proud tops of the eastern pines and darts his light through every guilty hole, then murders, treasons, and detested sins, the cloak of night being plucked from off their backs, stand bare and naked, trembling at themselves. So when this thief, this traitor Bolingbroke, who with all this while hath reveled in the night, while we were wandering with the antipodes," and that's he's really talking about Australia and New Zealand. He's talking about the people down under, is what he's talking about. He said, "Shall see us rising in our throne, the east, his treasons will sit blushing his face, not able to endure the sight of day." And so the king, the bishop says, "Hey, you've been anointed king, don't worry about it." His cousin's trying to help him be positive. But then the king goes on to say, this is page 59, "But self-affrighted tremble at his sin. Not all the water in the rough rude sea can wash the balm off from an anointed king." And so he's saying, "Look, I've been anointed king. There is no one that's going to wash that balm off." And he says, "The breath of worldly men cannot depose the deputy elected by the Lord." And so in some ways, what Richard is saying is true. You know, when King David was anointed king, it was a prophet that anointed him, and you couldn't take that away. I mean, that was done. And even if you look at the coronations on the English throne, I mean, they are anointed with oil, and it proves that God has put them in that office. He goes on to say, "For every man that Bolingbroke has pressed to lift shred steel against our golden crown, God is for his Richard, hath in heavenly pay a glorious angel. Then if angels fight, weak men must fall, for heaven still guards the right." And then now comes some bad news. The Earl of Salisbury enters the scene. And of course, if you ever see the film, I highly recommend you see the film on Richard II. And it's done by the BBC. It's very good. But anyway, Earl of Salisbury enters in. He says, "Welcome, my lord. How far off lies your power?" And so this is the king talking to Salisbury. And he says, "You know, how far off lies your power?" In other words, does Salisbury have a team of soldiers with him? And then Salisbury says, "Nor near nor further off, my gracious lord, than this weak arm. Discomfort guides my tongue and bids me speak of nothing but despair. One day too late, I fear me, noble lord, hath clouded all the happy days on earth. Oh, call back yesterday, bid time return, and thou shalt have 12,000 fighting men. Today, today, unhappy day too late. Overthrows the joy, thy joys, friends, fortune, and thy state. For all the Welshmen, hearing that thou wert dead, are gone to Bolingbroke, dispersed and fled. So the Welsh, they left and went over to Bolingbroke. So there is a lot of news going around. And then Armroll, again, this is the cousin, this is York's son, says, comfort my liege, why looks your grace so pale? Well, the king doesn't appreciate that, and he goes after him. He said, but now the blood of 20,000 men did triumph in my face, and they are fled? And till so much blood thither come again, have I not reason to look pale and dead? All souls that will be safe, fly from my side, for time has set a blot upon my pride. And so again, there's those very famous Shakespeare rhymes. And then Armroll says, comfort my liege, remember who you are. And then what's really interesting, again, we just watched the film yesterday, and the king says, oh, have I forgot myself? Am I not king? Awake, thou coward majesty, you sleepest. Is not the king's name 20,000 names? Arm, my name. A puny subject strikes at thy great glory. Look not to the ground. Ye, favorites of a king, are we not high? High be our thoughts. I know my uncle York hath power enough to serve our turn, but who comes here? And so here's another bit of bad news coming for him. He thinks, well, my uncle York is going to save me. I appointed him governor of England while I'm gone. And then enters Scroope, and he's again one of the lords. He says, Scroope says, more health and happiness betide my liege than can my care-tuned tongue deliver him. And so Scroope is coming in, and he doesn't have anything good to say to the king. He says, my ear is open and my heart prepared. The worst is worldly loss that canst unfold. Say, is my kingdom lost? Why, 'twas my care, and what loss is it to be rid of care? Strives Bolingbroke to be as great as we, greater he shall not be if he serve God. We'll serve him too, and be his fellow so. Revolt our subjects that we cannot mend, they break their faith to God as well as us. Cry woe, destruction, ruin, and decay. The worst is death, and death will have his day. And then Scroope says to him, you know, glad I am that your highness is so armed to bear the tidings of calamity. Like an unseasonable stormy day, which makes the silver rivers drown their shores, as if the world were all dissolved to tears, so high above his limits swells the rage. And he says, of Bolingbroke, covering your fearful land with hard bright steel, and hearts harder than steel, Whitebeards have armed their thin and hairless scalps against thy majesty. Boys with women's voices strive to speak big and clap their female joints in stiff, unwieldy arms against thy crown. Thy very beadsmen learn to bend their bows. Of double fatal yaw against thy state. Yea, the staff women manage rusty bills against thy seat. Both young and old rebel, and all goes worse than I have power to tell. And so things are not well at home. The king says, too well, too well, thou tellest a tale so ill. Where is the Earl of Wiltshire? Where is Bagot? Where is become a Bushy? Where is Green? That they have let the dangerous enemy measure our confines with such peaceful steps. If we prevail, their heads shall pay for it. I warrant they have made peace with Bolingbroke. And then Scroope then comes in. And you can see now that it's kind of like the steps that Shakespeare is giving us. He thinks everything is still fine, you know, with Bushy and Bagot and Green. But Scroope then does say, peace they have made with him, my lord. And then King doesn't realize what he's saying. He says, oh, villains, vipers, Damned without redemption, dogs easily one to fawn on any man. Snakes in my heart blood warming that sting my heart. Three Judases, each one thrice worse than Judas. Would they make peace? Terrible hell, make war upon their spotted souls for this. And then Scroop says, sweet love, I see, changing his property, turns the sourest, most deadly hate, again uncurse their souls. Their peace is made with heads, not with hands. Those whom you curse have felt the worst of death's destroying wound, and lie full low, graved in the hollow ground. Then Armoral says, is Bushy Green and the Earl of Wiltshire dead? Scroop says, aye, all of them at Bristow lost their heads. Armoral, where is the Duke, my father, with his power? And this is where another big negative thing is going to be taught to Richard. And King says, no matter where, of comfort no man speak, let us talk of graves, of worms, and epitaphs. Make dust our paper, and with rainy eyes write sorrow on the bosom of the earth. So this is probably one of the most beautifully written soliloquies in the plays of Shakespeare. And so the king is really speaking from his heart. He says, write sorrow on the bosom of the earth. Let's choose executors and talk of wills, and yet not so. For what can we bequeath save our deposed bodies to the ground, our lands, our lives, and all our Bolingbrokes? And nothing can we call our own but death, and that small model of barren earth which serves as paste to cover our bones. For God's sake, let us sit upon the ground and tell sad stories of the death of kings, how some have been deposed, some slain in war, some haunted by the ghosts they have deposed, some poisoned by their wives, some sleeping killed, all murdered, for within the hollow crown that rounds the mortal temples of a king keeps death his court, and there the antic sits, scoffing his state and grinning at his pomp, allowing him a breath, a little scene. To monarchize, and this is to monarchize, it means to do things kings do. That was a word that Shakespeare created. It's not a word, it was never in the dictionary until Shakespeare wrote it out. He said, to monarchize, be feared and kill with looks, infusing him with self and vain conceit, as if his flesh, which walls about our life, were brass impregnable, and humored thus, come at last, and with a little pin, bores through his castle wall, and farewell, king. Cover your heads and mock not flesh and blood with solemn reverence. Throw away respect, tradition, form, and ceremonious duty, for you have not but mistook me all this while. I live with bread like you, feel want, taste grief, need friends, subjected thus, how can you say to me, I am a king? And so he knows it's over. Then Carlyle, the bishop, comes in and says, my lord, wise men never sit and wail their woes, but presently prevent the ways to wail, to fear the foe, since fear oppresses strength, gives in your weakness strength unto your foe, and so your follies fight against yourself. Fear and be slain, no worse can come to fight, and fight and die is death destroying death, where fearing dying pays death servile breath. So Armoral says then to his cousin, my father hath a power, inquire of him, and learn to make a body of a limb. And so Armoral is truly going to get his head chopped off by trying to keep encouraging the king. The king said, you chides me well, proud Bolingbroke. I come to change blows with you for our day of doom. This ague fit of fear is overblown. So the king says, okay, you know what? I agree. I'm blowing it all out of proportion. And he said, and an easy task it is to win our own. So he's saying, oh yeah, I can get this all back. And then Scroop says, say, Scroop, where lies our uncle with his power? And then speak sweetly, man, although thy looks be sour. So he came out of his ague fit pretty fast because he's going to go right back in now. So it says, men judge by the complexion of the day, the state and inclination of the day. So may you by my dull and heavy eye. My tongue hath but a heavier tale to say. I play the torturer by small and small to length out the words that must be spoken. Your Uncle York is joined with Bolingbroke, and all your northern castles yielded up, and all your southern gentlemen in arms upon his party. Then the king says, you have said enough. And then he looks to Armroll and he says, beshrew thee, cousin, which did lead me forth of that sweet way I was in to despair. What say you now? What comfort have we now? By heaven, I'll hate him everlastingly that bids me be of comfort any more. Go to Flint Castle. There I'll pine away. A king's woe slave and kingly woe obey. That power I have, discharge and let them go to ear the land that has some hope to grow. For I have none. No man speak again to alter this, for his cousin is but vain. And so the king's telling Armorall, says, get out of here, go to Flint Castle. And of course, he's going to follow him there. He says, Armorall says, my liege, one word. King, he says, he does me double wrong, that wounds me with the flatteries of his tongue. Discharge my fellows, let them hence away, from Richard's night to Bolingbroke's fair day. And so essentially, what I've been trying to help you see is that Shakespeare has set up these three scenes to show that everything is really kind of over for Richard. It's he's not going to be able to maintain his rule, and essentially he says them to go to the front of Flint Castle. Now, the very next scene of the play is really interesting. This is Act 3, Scene 3. And again, this would be like the third part of this section that Shakespeare's writing. So Bolingbroke speaks up here. He says, so that by this intelligence we learn, the Welshmen are dispersed, and Salisbury is gone to meet the king, who lately landed with some few private friends upon this coast. So you can see that Salisbury is kind of working in between, and they're getting information back and forth. And so essentially Bolingbroke is already at Flint Castle. And so then Northumberland is there and says, this news is very fair and good, my lord. Richard, not far from hence, hath hid his head. So they're right there. They're kind of waiting for him and to see what he's going to do. And Northumberland says, then York says, it would beseem the Lord Northumberland to say King Richard. And so you can see York is still trying to stand up for his nephew. He is the anointed king. And Northumberland, you know, they're not happy with Richard because Richard has not been paying them the fees that they deserved for, you know, protecting the border at the north. And York says, alack the heavy day when such a sacred king should hide his head. And then Northumberland says, your grace mistakes. Only to be brief, left I his title out. So that sounds like a Democrat to me. I just left it out because I didn't want to be lengthy. So then Bolingbroke says, mistake not, uncle, further than you should. Take not good cousin. Then York says to him, take not good cousin further than you should, lest you mistake the heavens are over our heads. And so here's York. Remember now, he's one of the uncles. He's of the same line that you don't mess with government and you don't mess with God's anointed. And John of Gaunt would have felt the exact same way. And even though John of Gaunt believed he was a prophet and actually told him the truth about where he was going. And then Bolingbroke says, "I know it, uncle, and I oppose not myself against their will, but who comes here?" And then it says, "Enter Percy." Now, this is Northumberland's son, Percy. And then it says, "Welcome, Harry, what will not this castle yield?" And then Percy says, "The castle royally is manned, my lord, against thy entrance." And Bolingbroke says, "Royally? Why, it contains no king." And Percy says, "Yes, my good lord, it does contain a king. King Richard lies within the limits of yon lime and stone, and with him are the Lord Armorall, Lord Salisbury, Sir Stephen Scroope, besides a clergyman of holy reverence, who I cannot learn." And then Northumberland says, "Oh, belike it is the Bishop of Carlisle." And so then Bolingbroke, he's going to get onto this now. He says, "Now, but lord, go to the rude ribs of that ancient castle, though brazen trumpets send the breath of parl into his ruined ears, and thus deliver Henry Bolingbroke on both his knees, does kiss King Richard's hand, and send allegiance and truth, faith of heart." If I'm correct in my history, and I'm going to step out here, I think that this castle is part of Edward III's castles that he had in that area. And so, Richard would tend to want to go back to that castle because he knows where he's come from. He knows his father was the Black Prince. And, he's trying to just identify who he is and why he is and why he deserves to be king. And then Bolingbroke would also have a right to be there because of his status. And so it's really kind of interesting. So here Bolingbroke does say he's going to get on both of his knees and he's going to kiss Richard's hand. He's going to be respectful. And of course, this is what York wants to hear. "And sends allegiance and truth, faith of heart to his most royal person, hither come, even at his feet to lay my arms in power, provided that my banishment be repealed, and lands restored again be freely granted. If not, I'll use the advantage of my power, and lay the summer's dust with showers of blood, rain from the wounds of slaughtered Englishmen." So what he's saying, what Bolingbroke is saying here, is, look, I'm going to kiss the king's ring, and I want him to restore all of my lands back. That's what I want. But if he doesn't do it, it's going to be war. And that's the way Bolingbroke is saying. He says, it is such crimson tempest should be drench the fresh green lap of fair King Richard land. My stooping duty tenderly shall show, go signify as much while we here march upon the grassy carpet of this plain. Let's march without the noise of threatening drum, that from this castle's tottered battlements our fair appointments may well be perused. Methinks King Richard and myself should meet with no less terror than the elements of fire and water when the thundering shock at meeting tears the cloudy cheeks of heaven. Be he the fire, I'll be the yielding water. The rage be his while on earth I reign. My water's on earth and not on him. March on and mark King Richard how he looks." So that there's a trumpet blast, they're blowing the trumpets, they're getting Richard's attention. The Bishop of Carlisle is with him, Armorall is with him, Scroope is with him, Salisbury's with him, and it says, "CC King Richard doth himself appear, as doth the blushing discontented sun, from out the fiery portal of the east, when he perceives the envious clouds are bent to dim his glory and to stain the track of his bright passage to the Occident." And so if you ever see the film, it's like when Richard shows up at the top of the castle so they can see him. He's got like this big sun on his head. It's like he's the sun. So that's just part of the movie. Now, they're seeing he's come out, he's got his crown on, They see him come out. York says, "Yet looks he like a king. Behold his eye, as bright as the eagle's. Lightens forth, controlling majesty. Alack, alack for woe, that any harm should stain so fair a show." So York is still very much in favor of his nephew. Now the king looks down to Northumberland. He says, "We are amazed, and thus long have we stood to watch the fearful bending of thy knee, because we thought ourselves thy lawful king. And if we be, how dare thy joints forget to pay their awful duty to our presence? If we be not, show us the hand of God that hath dismissed us from our stewardship." So what the king is telling everybody is, look, he's looking at Northumberland, and he said, "Hey, I'm the lawful king. What are you doing?" And then, you know, remember now, Northumberland wants to get rid of him as much as Bolingbroke does. And King Richard keeps bringing God into the scene. He's like, I'm a God's anointed. What are you doing? He says, "That has dismissed us from our stewardship, for we will know no hand of blood and bone can gripe the sacred handle of our scepter, unless he do profane, steal, or usurp. And though you think that all, as you have done, have torn their souls by turning them from us, and we are barren and bereft of friends, yet know, my master, God omnipotent is mustering in his clouds on our behalf armies of pestilence, and they shall strike your children yet unborn and unbegot, that lift your vassals' hands against my head, and the threat the glory of my precious crown. Tell Bolingbroke, for yon methinks he stands, that every stride he makes upon my land is dangerous treason." So in some ways, Richard is not giving in. He's hiding out, but he's not giving in. "He has come to open the purple testament of bleeding war, but ere the crown he looks for live in peace, 10,000 bloody crowns of mother's sons shall ill become the flower of England's face. Change the complexion of her maid pale peace to scarlet indignation, and bedew her pastor's grass with the faithful English blood." So in some ways, King Richard is really saying something very truthful, that this is going to be a war, and it's going to put blood all over England, and that people are going to spill their bloods. It's going to be a bloody deal. Then Northumberland says, listen to this, "The King of Heaven forbid our Lord the King should so with civil and uncivil arms be rushed upon. Thy thrice noble cousin, Harry Bolingbroke, doth humbly kiss thy hand, and by the honorable tomb he swears that stands upon your royal grandsire's bones, and by the royalties of both your bloods, currents that spring from the one most gracious head, and by the buried hand of warlike Gaunt." So in other words, Northumberland knows the family, he knows them well, and you know, he's telling the king, you know, you all ought to just get along, just you know, don't be getting ready to fight each other. And Northumberland continues, "And by the worth and honor of himself, comprising all that may be sworn or said, his coming hither hath no further scope than for his lineal royalties, and to beg enfranchisement immediate on his knees, which on thy royal party granted once, his glittering arms he will commend to rust, his barbed steeds to stables, and his heart to faithful service of your majesty. This swears he is a prince and just, and as I am a gentleman, I credit him." So Northumberland is trying to tell the king that Bolingbroke is ready to kiss his hand, and he just wants everything back. And the king says, "Northumberland, say thus. The king returns, his noble cousin is right welcome hither, and all the number of his fair demands shall be accomplished without contradiction, with all the gracious utterance thou hast. Speak to his gentle hearing kind commends." Then he looks at Armoral and he says, "We do debase ourselves, cousin, do we not, to look so proudly and to speak so fair? Shall we call back Northumberland and send defiance to the traitor and so die?" So right now the king and Armoral, now they sent Northumberland back to talk to Bolingbroke. And now the king is saying, oh, did we do the right thing? I mean, he's asking his cousin Armoral to give him advice. And Armoral says, no, good my lord, let's fight with gentle words till time lends friends and friends their helpful swords. So the king is thinking, oh, maybe I made a mistake. Maybe we need to go back to Northumberland, say we're ready for war. And then Armoral says, no, my good lord, let's not do that. Then the king says, oh God, that ere this tongue of mine that laid the sentence of dread banishment on yon proud man should take it off again with words of sooth. Oh, that I were as great as is my grief, or lesser than my name, or that I could forget what I have been, or not remember what I must be now. Swellest thou, proud heart, I'll give thee scope to beat, since foes have scope to beat both thee and me. Then Armoral says, Northumberland comes back from Bolingbroke. Then the king says, what must the king do now? Must he submit? The king shall do it. Must he be disposed? The king shall be contented. Must he lose the name of king? A God's name, let it go. I'll give my jewels for a set of beads, my gorgeous palace for a hermitage. So one thing about King Richard was he was very religious. He was a religious Catholic, and he was always had his rosary beads with him. So that's historical. It says, my gorgeous palace for a hermitage, my gay apparel for almsman's gown, my figured goblets for a dish of wood, my scepter for a palmer's walking staff, my subjects for a pair of carved saints, and my large kingdom for a little grave. A little grave, an obscure grave, or I'll be buried in the king's highway, some way of common trade where subjects' feet may hourly trample on the sovereign's head. For on my heart they tread now while I live, and buried once, why not upon my head? Armoral, thou weepest, my tender-hearted cousin, we'll make foul weather with despised tears, our sighs, and they shall lodge the summer corn, and make a dearth in this revolting land. Oh, shall we play the wantons with our woes, and make some pretty match with shedding tears, as thus to drop them still upon one place till they have fretted a pair of graves. Within the earth, and therein laid, there lies two kinsmen, dig their graves with weeping eyes. Would not this ill do well? Well, well, I see, I talk but idly, and you laugh at me. Most mighty prince, my lord Northumberland, what says King Bolingbroke? Now that's interesting. He's saying, okay, what says King Bolingbroke? Will his majesty give Richard leave to live till Richard die? You make a leg, and Bolingbroke says aye. So he wants some information back. Now Northumberland says, my lord, in the base court he doth attend to speak with you. May it please you to come down. King says, down? Down I come like glistering phaethon, wanting the manage of unruly jades in the base court. Base court where kings grow base to come at all traitors' calls and do them grace. In the base court come down. Down court, down king, for night owls shriek where mounting larks should sing. So then essentially, after all that rabble, he says, okay, I'm coming down. So then Bolingbroke says, what says his majesty? Sorrow and grief of heart makes him speak fondly like a frantic man, yet he is come. And Bolingbroke says, stand all apart and show fair duty to his majesty. He kneels down, and then he says, my gracious lord. And then he says, fair cousin, you debase your princely knee to make the base earth proud with kissing it. Me rather had my heart might feel your love than my unpleased eye see your courtesy. Up, cousin, up. Your heart is up, I know, this high at least. And then what the king does, he touches his own head, although your knee be low. So Bolingbroke rises. He says, my gracious lord, I come but for mine own. And the king says, your own is yours, and I am yours, and all. Sir Bolingbroke says, "So far be mine, my most redoubted lord, as my true service shall deserve your love." The king says, "Well, you deserve, they well deserve to have, that know the strongest and surest way to get. Uncle, give me your hand. Nay, dry your eyes, tears show their love, but want their remedies. Cousin, I am too young to be your father, though you are old enough to be my heir. What will you have? I'll give, and willing too, for do we must what force will have us do. Set on towards London, cousin, is it so?" And then Bolingbroke says, "Yea, my good lord, then I must not say no." And so essentially, Bolingbroke appears to be getting what he wants, and it appears that the king is willing to work with him. All right, well, we're pretty much almost out of time, and what we'll do for our next podcast, what we'll do is we will slip into Act 3, Scene 4, and this is also an important scene because it's about Richard's wife, the queen, and her lady, and her attendants, and she has no idea what's going on, and then she hears from a gardener. He's got some scuttlebutt, and she overhears a gardener tell that King Richard is deposed, and so that's really, really, really very interesting. All right, that's all the time we have for today's program. Please write me any comments you may have to comments@kpcg.fm. You can also comment at my Twitter page, Shakespeare's Royal Education. Now, if you do not have a copy of this play, you can generally find a really good used copy on Amazon. And I've checked into them, and sometimes they're really priced very, very nicely, either $8 or $9. So that's not all that much to spend for such a good book. Now, you may also be able to find a good used copy of David Starkey's book, Crown and Country, at Amazon. And I highly recommend that to you because he gives us the history of all the kings of England. And it's really a great book. So thanks for joining me next time as we advance our royal education.
You've been listening to Shakespeare's Royal Education on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.